Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And if you're listening on the web, 989fm.com.au, or on our podcast a little bit later, welcome to you as well. It's good to have your company. Now, it's the 23rd of May, but in 3 days, it's going to be the 19th anniversary of the Bringing Them Home report. It was handed down in 1997. And of course, that looked into the stolen generations. And it led to the apology in 2008, where Prime Minister Kevin Rudd actually said, "The injustices of the past must never, never happen again." And it was obviously such a... I was there actually in Canberra, and it was almost phenomenal just sitting there and seeing that apology being delivered. But of course, we now know that since 1997 and since that apology in 2008, the rates of Aboriginal children being taken away from their families has grown exponentially, and I'm not exaggerating this. On June 30, 1997, so the same year the Bringing Them Home report was delivered, 2,787 Aboriginal kids were in out-of-home care. Now, today, more than 15,000 Aboriginal kids are in out-of-home care, and it's rising. Since 1998, the year after the Bringing Them Home report, it's risen by 400%. And I think it keeps growing every year since Kevin Rudd gave that apology. It's absolutely outrageous. And so this week, it's really sad that we mark the 19th anniversary of the Bringing Them Home report, because I guess nothing much has changed. But there is change of front coming from within our own communities, coming particularly from our strong grandmothers all across the country who are actually starting to fight back and put in place a lot of mechanisms to try and get children back and slow these rates of child removal. So this morning I have two guests in the studio and one on the phone, and hopefully we're going to get another lady, another grandmother online very shortly. Ani Sefa Williams joins me on the phone. I've got Ani Karen Fusi in the studio, and I have Debbie Jones in the studio as well. So I'll just get them up. Ani Sefa, are you there? How are you?
Ani Sefa.
Sefa, yeah. Sorry. Debbie told me 100 times, pronounce your name right. Sorry about that. No. And Ani Karen is here, and Debbie Jones. Ani Sefa, can I ask you your mob and your country, first of all?
Yeah, I'm Drumble, and that's Rockhampton way.
I'm Drumble too.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
Fraser Island, yeah.
Oh, nice. And yeah, so where are you living
originally
now?
Originally from Sherberg.
Oh, Sherberg.
I live in Chinchilla, yeah.
Great. And Ani Karen, what's your mob and country?
Yeah, I'm a Kukulandji, Kukuyimiji woman. Was brought up in Sherberg. Parents sent there, like stolen generation.
Yeah, yeah, right. So we'll obviously talk a lot about that in the coming moments. And Debbie, can I just get you to talk into the microphone there? Where's sure. your mob and your country?
Well, that's all. That's still up in the air. Link Up's still looking. So some of the Hinton mob from Wanneroo mob,
yeah.
Claim me. So Uncle Steve Hinton has said absolutely 100% your family. So that connects me through. So I first discovered that through Kai Bales, actually, the first day the embassy started. She said, "Hey, your mum's name's here on our family tree."
Wow.
So that's part of my journey.
So that's a very personal issue for you talking about.
It really, really is, because I was stolen as well.
Yeah, God. And I guess I want to ask first, Ani Sefa, your personal story. Why did you get involved with Grandmothers Against Removals?
No, well, me and my husband had five grandchildren taken off us because of allegations against me. And I had another son with me. I had to give him up. He was my brother's son, and child safety came in, they came in with allegations, of which I went to court, and that was thrown out of court because of lack of evidence. And also, when they took our children, they took our home with it. So we was kicked out and homeless and living in and out of our car, and till we got up stronger again and moved around, and that... when Sister Karen, I got older here, and we started on that part to helping one another and helping other people in the community by placing children back, and still haven't got our children back yet, but still helping others, yeah.
Yeah, right. And what was the impact, I guess, on your family of having those five grandchildren taken away?
Well, it was a big impact on a lot of us, me, my husband, and the six children. It was traumatic, the children that was in care being placed again, and they gone through the trauma twice, and it really had a big impact on our family. Yeah.
Are you able to talk to your grandchildren, or do you have much?
Yeah, I fought for the contact. I fought docs right through for all the contact from 2012 till up to now, and we placed them. Instead of docs placing them, we placed them. I fought for that too, and I got the six of them placed.
Were they in non-Aboriginal families? Okay, so they were with non-family members, non-Aboriginal people?
No, Aboriginal family, yeah. Yeah, no, I fought for all that, and I fought for all the contacts. Even when they took our children, they still gave me full access to the children. So while I was on a criminal court proceedings, going to court, they still gave me full contact from 2012 right up to now. So they failed in their duty of care too when they placed these children back with me. And we've got all the contact, like holidays, phone calls, and they still don't want to accept the fact that what they done wrong to me and my husband, where they could have placed the children with my husband and risk managed it, but they didn't. Made up all these lies.
Karen, can I ask you, Annie Karen, can I ask you your personal story as well? Because you, I guess, have a similar story, an all too familiar story of how your grandchildren were taken away.
Oh, well, I had the grandchildren, but it was my daughter was in the Royal Brisbane Hospital, and Department of Child Safety went up there, and while she was breastfeeding a baby, they took the baby off there with the security guards and took the baby downstairs to a special ward. My daughter rang me up and she said, "Mum, you need to come to the hospital. They've taken the baby away." And so it just reminded me of a story my mum told me, that when they went on the mission and they took her sister away because she was fair-skinned, it took me back to that story that my mum told me when she said they took the baby away. So I had to go to the hospital and I left with the baby. It was 3 days old. I fought very hard to keep her and her sister with me, took her to the federal courts. I won, and I've still got the children with me.
Yeah, you won custody of those children before they took them away.
Yeah, won the children and lost the daughter.
That's really sad.
Yeah, she committed suicide and, you know, being traumatised. But, you know, I fought for the rights of my grandchildren. And, you know, just encourage other people out there listening that, you know, that's not the end. You just got to keep on fighting to make sure that you're the rightful guardian, grandmother of those children. Yeah.
I guess, Debbie, hearing these stories, you were a victim of these same sort of child protection policies. How does it feel sort of seeing it from that other end?
It's actually really hard work for me. It's important work and I won't give up on it, but it kind of re-traumatises me every time I hear the stories and, you know, when I'm there, when I see the children being taken. So, you know, when we're first responding and those babies screaming and crying and kicking and biting and trying to stay with their families and how traumatic it is for them, you know, it really re-triggers me because it's a failure of duty of care on docs that they do it the way they do it, so aggressively and violently and without concern for how traumatising that is on the kids.
Does it shock you that so, 400% rise since 1997, this was never supposed to happen again. Does it shock you that those numbers are still so high? Because it's not that we can't look after our kids, but it seems to be the perception that that's the perception, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't shock me at all. I think I'm pretty cynical. I like to think I'm a realist and not a cynic, And I think that that's borne out by the facts, because there's something bigger at play here, you know, underlying, you know, the high incarceration rates, the child removals, the life expectancy, all of those things. There's another deeper layer of underlying institutional racism that's going on. So it really wasn't a shock to me, and that's why, you know, other measures, feel-good measures that are, you know, that are touted around, I have high scepticism, because what happens is they go, well, we said sorry, what more do you want? And what we really want is for it to stop, you know. So this idea that there was a stolen generation, it's a fallacy, you know. It's never stopped.
It's a continuing stolen generation, isn't it?
Mm.
Anisifa, I guess, how did you get involved with Grandmothers Against Removal? Can you tell me a little bit about this group specifically? Because I know that there is actually a change afoot, I guess. But first of all, why was it important to start mobilising under this Grandmothers Against Removal banner?
Well, it was... Well, the removal of our children, and also the high rate of Aboriginal children placed with non-Indigenous families and apparent lack of adherence to the placement principles.
So that principle is in place, isn't it? But they don't really use it. I mean, that's what I find amazing. In reality, it's not used.
To ensure that Aboriginal children, you know, to maintain strong links with their culture and family. And when child safety remove a child, they don't take it too lightly, you know, like the department, you know. The child is at risk and is in need of care and protection. There are a range of ways the department can deal with these issues and work with the carers and families to ensure the safety and well-being of this child. And most of our children and families, children in care, they lose out on their culture and their identity. They don't know who they are, you know.
Yeah, right.
That's why we formed a national network to build a grassroots people movement to stop the ongoing stolen generation and fight the system's disadvantage facing our people, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And Annie Karen, you've been involved. I know I met you down in Canberra, and it was really amazing to see all those strong grandmothers down in Canberra just marching on the streets, wasn't it, during Sorry Day? And unfortunately no politicians ever bother coming out. But, I mean, where is it going now? You were just in Canberra just earlier this year. Can you tell me a little bit about that timeline of where Grandmothers Against Removal has been since a couple of years ago when you were marching outside Parliament?
Yeah, we sort of ventured out to other communities, Alice Spring, being up there, you know, just as a grassroots person and helping other people in communities. Then we come back in February and formed the Sovereign Women United group. I think it's still talking about issues of our sisters, our aunties, our grandmothers, you know, that we're still united with the Grandmothers Against Removal. That's we get down there every February. So, yeah, but it's really, you know, you meet a lot of other aunties, that stories you hear, that it's really sad. And
are they similar to, are you shocked, I guess, over in other territories? I know NT has particularly high rates as well as New South Wales. I guess when you see that, like, it must be amazing to see how similar the situation is in other states.
Yes. And this year it was like we had a couple of the aunties from Jigalong, the Matu aunties, and they played the part in Rabbit Proof Fence.
Right.
And it was like, wow, this day and stage, they're here at the embassy and ready to come up and protest with the grandmothers. And, you know, that movie was made a very long time ago.
Yeah, and it's still happening.
And to see them aunties come over to support the movement, and it was like, you know, really open your eyes to what's today and what was and still happening.
Yeah, right. Debbie, I guess a lot of the perception, I think it's so hard to talk about the continuing stolen generations, because I think a lot of non-Indigenous people don't know a lot of blackfellas. They don't know, they don't see it. I think they come with their own unconscious bias. don't they? Can you explain, I guess, why it is that continuing stolen generations? I think people like to say, no, well, that happened under past policies. It happened because they're trying to assimilate people out. But from your perspective, why is it still that continuing stolen generation?
Oh, gosh, there are so many factors involved. I think one of the key factors is that, you know, government policy may change this way, that way. They change the name of programs and whatever. But the underlying assumptions never go away. So, you know, there's the assumption that if there's signs of poverty in a community that is, you know, statistically has a high rate of poverty, then that means that the children can't be cared for. There's the various deficit mentality that they have of our communities, because they're framing us with a white lens. You know, they're looking
white
through
terms
their,
of reference,
through
isn't
their
it?
White terms of reference. So for us, you know. Yeah, okay, so if you have to have four kids sleep in a bed, then you have to do that. But at least they're all together and they're loving each other and cuddling each other and looking out for each other. And from, you know, my perspective, that is far superior than having, you know, MasterChef food and children feeling lonely and alone. But that's not the white terms of reference perspective, and that's a large reason. You know, neglect is the highest cause.
I'm just going to bring that in. What does neglect mean to a white person? It might mean something completely different, doesn't it?
Yeah. To me, neglect means being disconnected. To me, neglect means feeling alone and lonely despite being around family members. Yes, you know, we're very heart-based people. And so as long as, you know, their heart connected to our heart, then, you know, we can overcome all of the trials and tribulations that happen, you know, as being Indigenous people in this society. But as long as those kids feel connected, they feel loved.
Yeah.
They know who they are. They know where they belong. They have a sense of connection and belonging.
Yeah.
Then they're not neglected.
We actually have a listener on the line. I'll just bring them in. Hello. Oh, they've actually gone. I thought we had a listener. I had them there. But I guess the other thing is, when you talk about the impact it has on children as well, it's also that incarceration system as well. I don't think people realise just how many kids go into how that cycle works, doesn't it? Did one of you want to pick up on that as well?
Well,
Annie Karen?
Yeah, okay. Well, actually, Sister Robbo will be talking about that a bit more, Sister Karen, if you get it back on the line. But, you know, there is that idea of this industrial prison complex, and we have from the classroom to the prison pipeline. And what happens is that when people are disconnected, they look for any kind of meaning they can, and they find that meaning when you're feeling really disempowered, when there's this really strong sense that you have no control over anything in your life, then I can speak from my experience. So I spent a lot of time running away from foster homes, and I was on the streets a lot, and I never felt more alive than when I was doing some kind of crime as a kid, you know, because I was the one in control. I was the one in charge. I was the one saying, nah, damn you, I'll do what I want to do and you can't stop me. And that was how I got a feeling of identity and a feeling of strength. And so, you know, the removals lead to that kind of thing, because there's a lot of anger and loneliness and emptiness that comes with that. And it's the only way I could feel good about myself was when I felt like I was being strong, but I had no guidance about how to be real proper strong, you know. I just went with the best thing I could see around me in all the group homes I was in.
Yeah, definitely. Would you like to add something to that, Annika?
Yeah, just only a week ago, the little girl now, she's 6 years old, and she's very fair skin and blonde hair, and she said, Nanny, how come I'm Aboriginal and my skin is fair? And I had to sit down and explain to her, I said, your skin, but you're still Aboriginal, your blood. And it made me think about if she was in care and I didn't fight for this child, what would they would have told her?
Mm.
Forget about your Aboriginality. You're a little white girl, you know. You're a little white girl with fair skin and blonde hair. And she was real happy when I told her, oh, Nanny, I'm Aboriginal like you, eh? And I said, yes, you are.
Yeah, that's beautiful, instilling pride in their Aboriginality as well, which is gets taken away when they're ripped away from their families, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes you think what the little ones are thinking.
Yeah.
And at that age, and I'm really happy that she asked me that question at that age so that she'll grow with that, knowing that, yeah, I'm Aboriginal. I look in the mirror. I'm white skin, blonde hair, but I'm Aboriginal.
Yeah. Because you've got that strong grandmother there to tell her that.
Yeah, yes.
We might just go to a break. We've got Annie Sifo Williams on the line. We've got in the studio Annie Karen Fusi, and we have Debbie Jones as well. We're going to come back. We actually have another lady we have to get on, and we've lost her, unfortunately, so I've got to find her again. But I think this song is very apt, and it's actually a request from Annie Karen. Archie Roach, Uncle Archie Roach took the children away. We'll be back soon. We're talking about the high rates of Aboriginal child removal in the same week, which is the 19th anniversary of the Bringing Them Home report.
The story's right, the story's true. I would not tell lies to you. Like the promises they did not keep, and how they fenced us in like sheep. Said to us, come take our hand, set us up on mission land, told us to read, to write and pray. Then they took the children away, took the children away, the children away. Snatched from their mother's breast, said this is for the best, took them away. The wealthy man looked holy strange, said you've got to understand, we'll give to them what you can't give, teach them how to really live, teach them how. Taught them prejudice, you took the children away, the children away, breaking their mother's heart, caring us all about, took them away. One dark day on Framlingham, came and didn't give a damn, my mom. Go get their dad. He came running, fighting mad. Mother's tears were falling down. Dad shaped up and stood his ground. He said, you touch my kids and you fight me. Then they took the stronger family, took us away. They took us away. Snatched from our mother's breast, said this is for the best, took us away. Set us up again and gave us gifts to ease the pain. Sent us off to foster homes. As we grew up, we felt alone, 'cause we were acting.
red and white, yet feeling black. One sweet day, all the children came back.
The children came back.
The children came back. Back where their hearts grow strong, back where they all belong. The children came back. Said the children came back. The children came back. Back where they understand, back to their mother's land. The children came back. Back to their mother, back to their father, back to their sister, back to their brother, back to their people, back to their land. All the children came back. Yes, I came.
If you missed today's show or would like to hear Let's Talk again, catch the repeat from 7pm weekdays or listen via the podcast at 989fm.com.au. Here's Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
Yes, welcome back to Let's Talk. Listening to Uncle Archie Roach, They Took the Children Away, and the reason we listened to that is because this week marks the 19th, it's actually Thursday. This Thursday marks the 19th anniversary of the Bringing Them Home report, and I'm sure many of our listeners know, sadly, intimately, the reason why we're talking about it, because since that report was handed down 19 years ago, the rates of Aboriginal child removal have actually increased by about 400%, and it seems to be going up every year. It doesn't seem to be slowing. So in the studio today, I've got Annie Karen Fusi, I've got Debbie Jones. On the phone, I have Annie Sifa Williams. We also have Karen Roberts joining us from down in Bundjalung country. How are you this morning, Karen?
Good, thank you.
First of all, can I ask you your mob and country?
Pardon?
Can I ask you your mob and country, first of all?
I'm Widgeable mob. There's many rivers down here, many tribes down here. I'm one of the Widgeable people. And I'd just like to thank everybody for inviting the Bundjalung to participate with you this morning and acknowledge the traditional owners of the country. And thank you for inviting us.
And can I ask you just your story? Why did you get involved with Grandmothers Against Removal?
It started with my son and my younger brother. We lost him in death to custody 12 years ago, and there's been no change.
Yeah, no, it's another sad story.
Our incarceration rates are really high. We have children in care that are self-harming themselves. We have children in custody self-harming themselves because they're locking our children away for long periods of time and on their own. So they're on lockdown for 23 hours a day. Now, we know with the mental health issue, that's not healthy for our children in at a young age. So they're doing a lot down here with our children, and it's the corrective service department.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Setting our children up to fail.
They're not just taking children away; they're also putting them on that pathway to end up in jail. And not just you know, as children, they end up going into jail as adults too. They're more likely, aren't they?
That's right. And when they're targeting them down here about. From 9 upwards, some of them are younger sometimes, and they charge them with minor offences, and then by the time they're 16, 17, they've got all these minor offences, and the police will target them more because of their past charges of of when they were younger, and it keeps them in the system.
Yeah, definitely. It's horrible. Just the whole system, the whole cycle is so destructive to our communities. And I guess that leads us into what Grandmothers Against Removals is doing now, which is they're actually looking more at the wider sort of experience, particularly of Aboriginal women, and looking at it as broader than the child protection system.
That's right.
Yeah, Aunty Sif, I want to bring you in as well. So yeah. Grandmothers Against Removal are actually changing to Sovereign Women United, which is...
No, I'm just a part of... Yeah, I'm a part of it, yeah. We're not changing anything. We're just a
but
part
you're
of
broadening
yeah,
it,
part
aren't
with
you?
Karen and them, yeah.
Yeah, Karen, can you... Debbie,
we support
can you tell me a little...
one another.
Can you tell me a little bit about that Sovereign Women's Unit and why it's so important?
Yeah, so it was really like Aunt Karen came back from Canberra in February and said, "Here, I think we need to look at the bigger picture as well." Like we always, there's a real thing we always, you know, in crisis mode, always in damage control, and so we need to. Aunt Karen was saying, you know, we need to support women before it comes to that, you know. We need to support, like there's a lot of them, you know, like me, you know. Anna Karen's been an amazing mentor for me, you know, who never got brought up with culture.
Mm.
You know, they identify, they're there, but they're confused, you know, and traumatised, and that intergenerational trauma, and they just need that strong connection and sense of community, you know, with other women to help them stay strong when the troubles come. And so with Sovereign Women United, we're still doing all that work the Grannies groups was already doing, you know, advocacy and supporting families when children have been removed or once they've come into contact with the department. But also, you know, just creating a strong sense of community of Indigenous women, you know, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander women, so that we can help prevent the removals in the first place as well.
Aunty Karen, did you find there's not a lot of support for women if they're in this process, is there?
No, there's not. We meet every Thursday then in a community centre in North Park Street, West End, because there's a lot of... support there with housing, legal support, and of course different ones go in there, and you know, they get the offices where there's different staff, and our people they won't go to somewhere unless there's that auntie, you know, that black face there.
Yeah.
So you know, you're sort of like, come on, come up here, and then you sit there and oh, wow, what's going on? And one auntie we had to bring in from Staffordshire had problems with housing. Oh, come on, come in there, because there's advocates there that will support them. There's there's that support in there. So I think now, because they we've got to, you know, work in and see where we can get that support for our people.
Yeah,
you know, and it's really hard that we can't go out there and do it. We do the work ourselves, but we still got to connect in.
Yeah.
Connect in with the, you know...
The wider other,
wider people and see where they can support us, you know?
It's interesting you raised housing, because, Aunty Sifa, you're talking about when your five grandchildren got taken away and you actually found yourself homeless. So did you have a lot of support at the time when that actually happened from other agencies?
No, we were sinking into depression and... No, we had no support, not from anybody, not even the Aboriginal workers from IFAX. We just got up and did it ourselves then. Mm-hmm. Another thing I'd like to mention is, like women, we speak out, we've got the mount, but also there's a lot of men that suffer. They suffer in silence.
Yep, they do.
A lot of our men need to be recognised too. I've got a brother who done the same thing and made commitments and got his children back. We are still struggling. We're still fighting the same fight, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's just like going round and round in the merry-go-round.
That's very
the same.
True.
And also, yeah, that's I like to acknowledge all the men, too, that we support. And because, like I said, we talk, we go out and we mouth off, but the men, they stay silent and they suffer. Yeah.
Karen, what's the situation like down in your country, down in New South Wales? Is it very similar than up in here in Queensland?
Yes, it is. And our men are getting left behind a lot, and our young warriors, and that's our children aren't getting that spirit, that strength.
Yeah.
Because our people are suffering.
I think it's really important point to make, Anisifa and Karen, because obviously the men are often the victims too. They're the victims of this child protection system, aren't they? Yes. A lot of these young boys have been taken away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very sad. Did you want to...
it's a big impact on the whole family when this happens.
Do you find, Debbie, when we talk about child protection, we don't talk about the whole family maybe? Is that part of the problem or...?
Yeah, it's a big part of the problem because, I mean, the way the department works. So, you know, we've got a big event coming up on Thursday for National Sorry Day. And what we want to focus on is holding docs accountable for their failure of duty of care. So, you know, they fail our families when children first come to the department's attention. So a child comes to the department's attention because there's been an allegation or, you know, whatever. And then what they do is they just sit back and they don't do anything. Like if there's a genuine problem, that child is actually being abused, they sit back a week, 2 weeks and allow that to continue while they collect their evidence, But then what they do is they just swoop in. So a lot of the cases, it's a neglect thing. So I've had allegations made against me, which fortunately I've fought, but I've been under 6 months investigation doing that where, you know, we had an allegation that the kids weren't, there wasn't any food in the house and the kids weren't getting fed properly.
A poverty issue as well.
Yeah, but the thing is that it was so untrue, it's not funny. You know, my cupboards are always to the eyeballs full of food and I've got a freezer that's full of food as well as my fridge because I was raised in poverty and so food security is a massive issue for me. So I've always got more than what we need. So it was just a completely false allegation. They came in, they immediately saw that we had heaps of food, but then they investigated us for 6 months because, you know, I don't fold my clothes up and put them away properly. They're in a pile, you know, in a neat pile, but they're in a pile. So then, you know, I have docs workers in there telling me how to fold my clothes properly and stuff. It's like...
That's where the paternalism comes in, doesn't it? And it's this high surveillance of Aboriginal families, which is the problem.
Yeah.
White families don't have that high level of surveillance, which I guess is why, you know, Aboriginal kids are more likely to be taken away.
Yeah. So they fail in the beginning. When they first come to the attention, they fail during the removal process, that trauma that those kids experience and those families experience. And then they fail when the children are in care. And, you know, we got so many stories of kids who, you know, like in our work that we hear and personal stories of kids who are under docs. And they've been neglected by docs. They've been allowed to just go from house to house to house.
Mm.
And, you know, we got one young girl now very close to our heart, 13, pregnant, and like that under docs care that, you know, we've been saying to them, look, you've got to get this one to her grandma. And they're like, she's all right. She's staying at this place. We checked it out. It's okay. She's staying at that place. And now, you know, she's 13 and pregnant. And then we got the failure of the care once they're 18 and they're discharged from care. So my personal story, you know, I was begging from about 15 by the time I'd gotten over my fury to start connecting with my Indigenous side of my family. And they weren't having any of it, you know, and they did nothing to help me to connect with any family. They just, like, you're 18, see you later, done.
Yeah, finish with some. Karen, I just wanted to ask you, I guess, I actually sat in a Senate inquiry a couple of years ago into out-of-home care, and I actually sat into the one in Sydney, and they had all these fax workers, the department heads, I guess you could say. I think that was what their position was. And they're talking about all these policies that they had in place. So the senators had heard from a lot of the grandmothers and the aunties before. They'd heard what the problem was. And then you had the fax department heads coming in and say, well, we've got processes in place. It's actually happening. But obviously it keeps happening. So where's the disconnect between those? Obviously there's a disconnect between what's happening up the top and what's happening down the bottom. Is that what you found down in New South Wales?
Yes, it is. And then because there's no more carers, what they're doing down here is that's how our incarceration rate's getting really high, because there's no carers for all these children that they're taking away.
Yep.
And they're just, like you're saying, they're just letting them do, basically letting them do what they want, and they're setting them up to fail again.
That's very true.
And that we've got kids in care that are doing self-harm to themselves. What's going on?
Mm. I mean,
if they're in care already and they're doing this stuff to themselves, they're not in a good position.
They're not, definitely. Auntie Karen, I guess 2008, did you remember seeing the apology? What was your thoughts when you saw the apology, Kevin Rudd's apology into the Stolen Generations?
Yeah, well, like a band-aid, I think, to cover up everything.
Mm.
And like you're talking about, you know, the neglect of this department. You know, they take you in when there's an allegation and they sit you at the table. And they are laws unto themselves. You know, they find you guilty at their table, but they don't take you to, it's not in front of a judge and jury. Then they remove the child. Then the child turns out to be neglected from the department, you know. So, you know, they say, oh, yeah, we're caring about this child. And, you know, the child hasn't even been to school for a year and a half. And you remove this child from a certain person and... Oh, my God, you know.
They're no better in foster care.
You say you're the, you know, child welfare that look after children, you know. And that, I think that's why we find it hard for our people to come foster carers, because of the department.
Mm.
They get an allegation from a child, then they come in and they want to, you know, serve that mother or the father, you know.
People are scared.
And they're scared to, and then they got all these posters up there.
Yep.
You just got to drive around, you'll see, oh, become a foster parent. But I think our people are afraid because, you know, why should you be a foster carer when you're going to be traumatized by them people, you know? And I think, like, Sister Kara, we have to look at other avenues, like our sovereign rights, and how do we fight for our children?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I think it's a really sad. The other thing that I think, when you're talking about all women and the support we have to give to all women, is obviously women who are victims of family violence as well. Because I know a lot of women are scared to come forward because they're scared of having their children taken away through no fault of their own, because obviously they're victims of this violence. Where do we go from there? Is that part of the Sovereign Women's Group, Debbie, what you'll be looking at?
Yeah, look, I have this little personal vision myself of this idea, because I know, like, there's this Torres Straits brother, Kanatwana, who's set up a men's group in Ipswich Way for the same thing, you know, to support children from removals and that kind of thing. I have this idea that if the men could... you know, organise themselves and make a little hotline. I mean, this is a problem, you know, all these ideas, they're unfunded. All we're doing is unfunded, you know. Mm. It was coming out of our own pockets to get to national meetings or to print out flyers or whatever, so, you know, and we're all just, you know, struggling anyway. But if they could get themselves organised and have, like, a phone number that all the women in the community knew, if there's domestic violence, they could call these men. And the men would come and take that other man away, the one that's being violent, take him away. And then she doesn't have to leave her home. The kids don't have to leave their home. We don't have to involve the police unless, you know, there's actual, like, you know, it has to. And then they take that man away and they school him a bit, you know.
I think you're talking about, like, community solutions. When you just start talking about solutions, not top-down from government, from mainstream, who are saying this and that, and it ends up affecting Aboriginal women more. Auntie Sifa, I wanted to ask you, do you think there's enough support, legal support, when women do have trouble and trying to get their children back? I mean, where can women go legally? Did you find that you had a lot of legal avenues?
No, I'm still struggling today. I'm still struggling today with legal
support. It's very hard out there for support for mothers and fathers.
Yeah.
And in my situation, and you have, we're really struggling now. And when we go to court, we're just going to talk on our own behalf and stand for ourselves, you know. And, well, the people who've been traumatized by the impact of removal of children, like me, for instance, you have to be traumatized by it, and but you still stand back up strong again and keep fighting them and fight them, you know. And a lot of Aboriginal families all suffered. But if you're going to give in to them and, you know, but legal, they just the same. I'm still struggling. I've had my children removed 2012. And we 2016 now, and still got no legal aid.
It's horrible, Karen. Is that the same for you down in New South Wales? It is terrible. Is that the same for you down in New South Wales regarding the legal aid situation?
Yes, because with legal aid, when we're trying to get our children back and trying to do our that with our right, it's not working because the Crown doesn't go against the Crown, and they're not going to benefit from using these solicitors.
Yeah, right.
We still go around in a merry-go-round, like Aunt was saying, and the more time you're in the court, at the end of that day, you're mentally and physically drained again by past trauma and then from that trauma from that day.
Well, I was just going to say the criminal justice system would be traumatic for you in regards to your son. So it's very hard to have faith in that white justice system.
So what we do is we'll have a talk before we go to court, and with each one of us custodians that know the system, and we all have that talk deep before we go to the court, and we speak for ourselves, and we still run things with legal aid, but we don't have them fully speaking for our children because it's in ourselves, because it just doesn't benefiting us.
Yeah.
And every time that a child is incarcerated or goes into care, those people are getting a commission out of it. So we're still in the merry-go-round.
Yeah, it's very sad. It's just this caustic system. Annie Karen Fusi, what's happening now in Brisbane particularly? I know that there are more avenues in order to get that sort of help that you're trying to look at.
Yeah, well, we've only just got this message from the Kaskin lawyers on, you know, helping with child protection for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders support. So one of the sisters going to come along on Thursday, and she's going to be one of the speakers. So, you know, just encourage our mob out there, come along, and then this Sister Karen and the Bundjalung mob will be up and talk on our sovereign rights. So I think we got to, like, aim all avenues, see whatever it takes, you know. We was a bit worried about putting this post that, you know, mixing the sovereign woman stuff with the legal stuff, but we talked to the brother and he said, no, let it go, you know, and we can maybe educate them about our rights and all this, and
well, sovereignty is at the heart of our people's struggle, isn't it?
Yes,
so I think you can't remove the two.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Debbie, did you want to talk a little bit about what's happening on Thursday up in Brisbane, so our listeners have a little understanding?
Sure. So we'll be meeting at Musgrave Park at 10 a.m. down near the playground. So people are welcome to bring their kids. We've got a couple of volunteers going to be watching the kids at the playground. So, you know, they'll be right while you attend the forum. The forum will have their Annie Karen here, Annie Karen Fusi, Annie Sifa Williams, Karen Roberts, and also Candice Hughes from Caxton Legal, who will be talking about their newly funded, child protection section, which they've actually got two Aboriginal women lawyers who are going to be heading that up. So so there'll be Aboriginal women there supporting our women, our families, to find the correct way to fight the system, because at the moment there's zero information. So in the conversations that I've been having with them, you know, we've been saying, look, what we really need, one of the things that that DOCS does is it never, ever provides people with their rights. When you ask for what are my rights in this situation, they only tell you what their rights are and your responsibilities are.
Yeah.
They never, ever give that information out. So that's one really important thing. But other kinds of advocacy, and, yeah, Brother Lewis Brother Lewis Walker from down there is also going to be there, and he's happy to yarn with them about how they can support White Way, Legal Way, support our sovereignty movement in the courts. So that'll be really helpful because, yeah, we rung Brother Lewis and said, look, we want to include these lawyers because, you know, they are a resource that we want to be able to access. But also we don't want them taken over and making all the decisions. And he said, yeah, no, that's all right. You know, we use every tool in the toolbox. We just got to make sure we use the tools the right way, you know. So we don't use a hammer to screw a nail. To screw in. So that's a really important part of it. And then so what we'll do is we have the forum, and then we're going to provide a light lunch, and then we have a march up to the DOCS head office, which is just up the corner there on Russell Street. And Arnie Sifa Williams is going to be giving her 10 recommendations in.
Okay.
And then... and other people who want to talk there. We're inviting along some politicians, Jonathan Shree and some other politicians. Most of them won't be able to come because it's election time, but we're hoping that we'll get a statement from
them.
Isn't
it sad?
Least.
It'll never be an election issue, will
yeah,
it?
No.
But it's probably a good thing it isn't, because you never know. I don't trust a lot of the rest of the community.
And then afterwards, after that's done, we're just going to have a debrief down here at the Hub. So that's Small Park across from the Lizard Lounge. And, you know, have cups of tea and yarn up and talk about the future, because, you know, what we got coming up is next year is the 20th anniversary of the handing down of the recommendations of the Bring Them Home report. And we've gotten some calls from other communities in Queensland and outside of Queensland where people are trying to do this work themselves. And we're all keen to get together and have a really big national forum where all nations are represented and come at a unified approach for how we deal with next Sorry Day. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that'll be a very sad anniversary, the 20-year anniversary. Mm. And I guess if people want to find out a bit more about your group, Money, Karen, Fuzzy, how would they go about best doing that if they want to find out more details, way to get involved and
meet us down at the Norfolk Street in West End, the community house. And we're down at the Hub across from the Lizard every Saturday. We've got that booked out for the whole year, so come on down.
So every Saturday you can come down and have a chat, eh?
Yeah, coffee and things that we make, we sell there.
Yeah.
Necklaces, and we make some bags and different kind of stuff. So, you know, you're most welcome to come down, have a yarn.
Yeah, definitely. And, Cara, I guess, is there any contact details or something that you would like to say, Debbie?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the Sovereign Women United Facebook group. That's easily found because there's no other one called that. and then maybe Annie Karen and I can also leave our phone number with you for people to, if they want to get in touch for about this Thursday or about being a part of this national forum for next year.
Yeah,
we're
definitely
already starting to organise that.
Yeah, we'll put everything up on our Facebook page if you guys want to check it out. And Oh, we could have kept talking for hours, I think. And I want to thank you so much for coming online as well, Annie Sifa and Annie Karen down in Bundjalung Country. And sorry we couldn't. It's very hard when you not everyone's face-to-face, but I really appreciate you being on the line this morning. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your input.
And hopefully we'll continue to cover this issue because I think it's one of the most disgraceful things that our country is doing. And I think it's a form of assimilation. It's in itself a form of genocide because it's ripping out our next generation. It's ripping up our children. And I think we need to start listening to the strong grandmothers and also the men, as Ani Sifa, you know, eloquently stated. And we've got to start healing our communities, don't we? So thanks so much for joining me on the line. You'll find this back online, 989fm.com.au. For now, here is the news.